This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust.
I've gambled every day at work for probably 4 or 5 years, maybe, even to the extent that I rearranged the office that I worked in so that my monitors were away from other people's. Yeah, I kept it covered up as such, and no one really knew what was going on at all. You become the world's biggest liar very, very quickly and very easily.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch, and you've just heard from Andy, who has come through a 20-year cycle that led from initially social betting to a prison sentence for gambling-related harm. Now, while situations like these might be familiar to us in terms of our customers, Andy gambled and experienced much of his gambling-related harm in the workplace. So in this Vulnerability Voices episode, we look at colleagues in crisis rather than customers and use the lens of gambling-related harm to think about vulnerability and the people around us at work. Joining us to bring this to life are Andy and also Paul from the Bet No More Gambling Awareness and Support Initiative. And they explain to Michael Hilton from Three Hands Insight just how their working lives are gripped and shaped by addiction for years, including the hidden tactics they use to gamble during office hours, the broader and unhelpful normalization of gambling within their working environments, and why simply asking a colleague, "Are you all right?" might not just be enough for those vulnerabilities that are built on deflection and untruth.
Today, we're seeking to deepen our understanding of gambling addiction, and in particular, what businesses can do to spot and support colleagues and customers who are at risk. And I'm joined by Paul and Andy, who have kindly agreed to share their own experiences with us. Thank you both so much for being here. Paul, would you be able to give us an introduction first, just to your experience of gambling addiction? We'll turn to the role of business in a minute, but just to give us a bit of context to your own experience to start us off.
Yeah, so my experience, I started gambling at the age of 19. First year of university, a very overwhelming experience for me going to university, having ADHD, having mild autism. I just found it overwhelming, and that's where it first started. It lasted for 11 years, and then at the age of 30, I stopped gambling completely, and I've been in recovery since then.
Thank you very much, Paul. We'll come to more on this in a moment, but Andy, just give you the chance to introduce yourself and set the context for us a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me on. So my experience maybe a tiny little bit different to Paul's there. So I probably started gambling maybe a little bit younger, and it went on for 20 years or so, I guess. I always look back on it and I always think that I didn't see there as being anything much of a problem going on. And I saw it as like a leisure social thing because it was what I saw my friends doing and you know, peers and stuff like that. But gradually, one way or another, gradually it crept up on me, and the amount of money that I was spending increased. I got myself into financial difficulties with credit cards and debt and stuff like that I couldn't pay. And the very short version of a much longer story, I guess, is that when all the money had ran out eventually, I turned to crime to fund my gambling and committed fraud at a business that I'd worked at for 20 years or so. Stole an enormous amount of money, gambled all of it, and eventually went to prison and served a prison sentence for that. In terms of recovery, just over 5 years without a bet, which is a nice feeling.
Thanks very much. So it's a big impact on your lives, you're saying, both over a decade, really, when you were sort of in the grip of it, but actually now quite a period of time that you've had since it happened. What did it mean for your day to day, Paul? You know, when you were in the grip of this, what kind of impacts did it have? And did the people around you know what was going on for you?
So the first sort of employment I had after university was when it first started getting very serious. And that lasted for 6 months. And I was actually let go from that employer. They sacked me because of my punctuality. And because of my behaviour just wasn't appropriate at the time for the the employment that I was working in at the time. And then when it first started escalating was probably my second job, which I'm still working for the same company now, worked for them for 8 or 9 years, and it's in the financial services sector. And the problem with gambling for me is, and I'm sure Andy will agree, it's a hidden addiction, and you don't see the same side effects you see with alcohol, you see with smoking. But if you pay attention to someone's behavior enough, you'll be able to see certain things that they do that maybe they spend too much time doing. For example, they spend too much time on their phone, or they aren't aware of what's happening in the room as much as they should be.
And let's come back to what should have been there and what you think workplaces should be doing. But I'm interested, Andy, in kind of your perspective on, you talked about that sort of gambling within the workplace, and were people aware? Did they become aware? What was that experience like?
I think, one of the things that I think is really important for the listeners of this pod to realize is that if you become at the point where you are addicted to gambling and it goes out of control as such, that person becomes incredibly dishonest and deceitful. So you'll try and cover your tracks in any way, shape or form. So you're absolutely right. A second ago, you mentioned, Michael, so gambling in the workplace and stuff. I gambled every day at work for a period of probably 4 or 5 years, maybe, give or take. And even to the extent that I rearranged the office that I worked in so that my monitors were away from other people, so other people couldn't see what I was up to, on the computers and stuff like that. I gambled a lot whilst I was at work, but one way or another for a whole number of years, I kept that a secret and kept it covered up as such. And no one really knew what was going on at all. You become the world's biggest liar, very, very quickly and very easily. And for me, I suppose I could reflect a little bit on that and say, well, that wasn't just in the workplace, that was at home as well. You start to do some crazy, crazy things to cover the tracks and, you know, tell one lie to cover the other lie up and so on and so forth. So I suppose my experience was just trying to hide it all away. And the other thing as well, I'd say, in amongst that as well, Michael, is whilst all of that was going on for me, I wasn't willing to reach out for any support. Not in the same way that Paul tried to go through his the EAP, his employer and stuff like that. I didn't attempt to do anything like that because, again, the harsh truth of it all is that I didn't want to. I actually didn't have any sort of thoughts in my head that I wanted to stop. The gambling, I felt, was the thing that was keeping me going, and it wasn't until. It wasn't until much later when it had eventually stopped, and I then started to unpick some of that and started to recognise that actually I did need to get some proper support and some proper help, again, through sort of similar organisations as the ones that Paul was mentioning there. But it's one of these things where you do not, and again, Paul mentioned it, is invisible, so you can't see what's going on. It's very different to, you know, drugs, alcohol, or any other kind of addiction, which will present itself physically. And it's very difficult to try and break that cycle. I've not been addicted to all of those other things that I just mentioned, but I'd say it's probably the hardest thing to get over. And the reality of it as well is that you're unlikely to stop until all the money's gone.
So do you think there's anything your colleagues, your bosses, the workplace could have done? As you say, you're brilliant at hiding it. You're doing everything you can. You're actually not in a place where you want to stop. Is there anything you think a workplace can do to try to help you, protect you in some way in that situation?
It's obviously difficult because, as I just said, you try and cover it all over as much as you can. Having the right the right technology in place so that you know, certain websites are blocked on the company network and things like that, monitoring of that side of things, open conversations around, you know, these subjects, just kind of brings it to light a little bit. People, for whatever reason, people, even though a lot of the stigma is gradually being broken down and people are being persuaded to talk about mental health and, addictive type things, one way or another, there's still a long way to go in terms of gambling, and people, for whatever reason, don't seem as though they want to talk about it. You know, you might know that your friend is betting on the football over a weekend, but you never really get into the thought process of saying, is that, is it becoming harmful? Is it, am I concerned about this person at this point in time? It's all quite often in the workplace, you hear some of the, not just in the workplace, in life in general, you hear some of the worst possible questions asked of someone, so that the traditional, are you all right? And that's, that whole leading question just brings the other person to say, yeah, I'm fine. So more curious conversations, either in the workplace or outside of it, I think, that's the way to go as far as I see it. It could be a conversation around the actual gambling, or it could be, so what did you get up to at the weekend? What are your plans for this week? You got any thoughts about a holiday this year? How's the family? Et cetera, et cetera. And gradually, if you ask sort of more open-ended questions like that, you can sometimes start to get a bit of a flavor of, do you know what, there's something not right with this person. And then you might start to delve a bit deeper into what's actually going on. And certainly from the employer side as well, the same sort of concept would fit with my view of that as well.
And Paul, I know you've done quite a lot in the past in workplaces to raise that awareness. But what do you think you can do in a workplace just to maybe start challenging that stigma, start giving people the support if they want it, I guess?
I think it is not about signposting people to the employee assistance program always, because all it takes for some people is just to have that conversation with someone. All it might take for someone is just to realize what they're doing. And the more you build your relationships with people at work, the easier these conversations they're going to become. This conversation for me is important because on Friday, I discovered for the last 2.5 years that I'd been putting money into a social lottery that we have. And that social lottery means I could have won money from it. And I'd completely forgotten about it. And it was only because I was checking something on my payslip that I'd worked that out. And that makes me feel guilty because it means that, yes, it wasn't my form of gambling, the National Lottery and lotteries, things like that, but it is still a form of gambling. It's not to say people shouldn't gamble. If you can gamble safely, then I have no problem with that. It's just when the difference is between gambling safely and not gambling at all. And I don't think I can gamble safely, so I choose not to gamble at all. But colleagues around me at the time, so I remember at a place of employment that it was Cheltenham Week, and Cheltenham Week, actually, people around me encouraged that gambling. And we all encouraged each other. It wasn't just me being encouraged or them being encouraged. But I don't blame them for encouraging that, because all of them said to me, and all of my friends and family have said to me, or most of them, some of them knew that I had the addiction, but most of them have sort of said to me, we didn't know you had this addiction, because there's very small behaviors that you can see in someone. If you spend a lot of time with someone, you can notice that behavior. It's about normalizing the conversation. And the easier we make the conversation, the easier it's going to become. Even if the conversation starts by asking how your week's been, then it can move on to everyone struggling financially at the moment because of the different reasons. And then sometimes that could lead to the important conversation, which is, are you addicted to anything? Just because you're addicted to something doesn't mean you're a problem for the employer. It means that that employer needs to support you during the recovery process of what you're, which recovery you choose to go through.
We've talked a lot about colleagues, people around you in a workplace. What about a business's responsibility to its customers, which will obviously be a big thing for those listening as well? You know, how much responsibility do you place on a financial institution or an energy company or someone to try and spot these signs, to try and get the support to where it's needed? What do you think we can expect of the businesses who are listening, Andy?
It's a really good question. If I just talk about my personal addiction just briefly, and sort of my story, my background just briefly, I've always, as part of my recovery, I've always felt it really, really important to me to take personal responsibility for what I did. It kind of gets me a level of internal closure on some of that, for me to say, yeah, I was the person responsible for this. I went through a period of time when I saw loads of other people were to blame as well. You know, largely the gambling companies that I was spending all of these, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds with that didn't belong to me. So I have to take personal responsibility. But then if I then look at it through a slightly wider lens and try and see it a little differently, I think there are so many other moving parts and other cogs in the wheel that could play a far better and a far stronger game, if you call it that, that these things should get picked up and should get noticed a lot quicker. I'll give you a brief example. So as I was stealing money week by week to fund my gambling, I was funneling it all through my personal credit card, which when I signed up to, I think I had a salary of about 50 grand or so, and I would have put that on the application form and got accepted for the card that I'd applied for. When I was at the worst, I was funneling tens of thousands of pounds through that card on a weekly basis. And that for me must have been spottable, if that's the right word to use. Same with banks and so on and so forth. I remember having a phone call with my bank at the time, and basically I'd done all of my wages within days of payday, and I was trying to get them to agree an overdraft for me to see me through the rest of the month, which they wouldn't do. But they would also have seen, when we were having that conversation, they would have seen where all of that money was being spent. But there was no kind of interaction in amongst any of that, and there was no we've got a little bit of an idea of why you're short of money here, because obviously we can see your transactional stuff. We'd like to try and get you some appropriate support if we can. We'd like to try and signpost you to an organisation that maybe would be able to help you a little bit here. We can't lend you any more money. Rightfully so. If they'd have lent me more money through an overdraft on that particular phone call, I would have blown it that night. There's things that these organisations could and I think should do, especially in this technological age that we're in nowadays, where everything's audit trailed, trackable. You can have AI that's literally screening some of this stuff and flagging up the areas of concern. And I think that's where, again, with your listener base for this, financial services and so on and so forth, I think that's where people need to start to have a think about: are we doing as much as we could do here? Is there something more that we could do to try and prevent harm to people that are addicted, and then also to try and create a more robust framework for ourselves in terms of our own processes and if it does relate to lending money, do we want to lend money to someone that's actually addicted to gambling? I don't think we want to do that. That's poor in every way, shape or form.
There's something about just addressing the stigma and creating a workplace where people can have the right relationships and the conversation. They can notice the signs. There's something about if someone does reach out, just how much of a moment that is, given what you've said about what you are in the throes of addiction, how important that is and how important it is to get it right, whether they're a customer or a colleague. And then there's something about, well, actually with technology and the way everything's going, companies can spot things. And certainly from your perspective, that there's an important role there, and you want that intervention. You want that sort of ability to use that data to do something, to actually try and make a change for people. Amongst all of that, then, I guess a final question for you both. What's top of your list for the people listening? What's the sort of thing that you think it's most important that the people in businesses listening do to prevent gambling harm for people who experience what you've experienced in the future? Should we go to Andy first?
Yeah, sure. Good question. I think for me, it would be to recognize gambling harm as a real thing, and not just to turn a blind eye to it and pretend that it's not happening. So to realize that it is going to, you know, it will be something that's impacting people within every company up and down the country. There'll be someone in amongst that that's probably having a little bit of a difficult time because of their gambling. So a recognition and a realization that it is a real thing. It does cause real damage to people's lives. In extreme cases can lead to, you know, suicide, as sad as that may sound, but it's the truth. So to recognize that, and then to be as curious as possible when you're trying to watch over your staff, your colleagues, your friends, your family, whatever it might be. You can't have like a Monday morning interrogation session where you ask someone how much they lost on Saturday on the football, but just little conversations now and then, just to try and paint a picture of what might be going on. One of the things that people with gambling addiction will regularly do is they'll just regress from conversation and social circles entirely. So when you see something like that happening, that's when these open questions can come into play. And, you know, just like I say, some polite curiousness and recognition that gambling harm is a real thing.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andy. And Paul, what would you say to those listening?
So it's incredibly blunt and honest, but if you're not comfortable having these conversations, get comfortable having them, because you need to make it as easy for that person to come to you as an employer as you can make it, because the earlier the intervention, the easier it's going to become for you to prevent the addiction from escalating, whether it be alcohol, drugs, smoking, or gambling, which in our case it is gambling. But the easier you make it, the easier it's going to be for that person to reach out to you. So more understanding of gambling as an addiction would help, in my opinion.
Thank you both very much.
And that was Paul, Andy, and Michael Hilton. To find out more about how Three Hands Insight brings lived experience and businesses together, visit threehandsinsight.co.uk. And to learn more about Bet No More, it's simply a case of visiting betnomoreuk.org. And many thanks to John Fenner and Bet No More for making this episode possible. And that's about it for today. So until next time, look out for your colleagues, look after yourselves, and always remember that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.